This time, they asked her to sit down at the beginning of the session, and the rest spread themselves around the table on all sides. Only the Master Mason still seemed hostile. "We appreciate your cooperation," began the mayor. "Now that we know something of your background, let me explain how things stand in Brewersbridge. We're on a major trade route from the west to the sea. We have a lot of traffic through, and want it. We depend on it. Nonetheless, I hope you won't be insulted when I say that the council is opposed to having free blades around town. Some of them, like you, are honorable folk, and cause no trouble intentionally. Others, like the fellow who died, pick quarrels everywhere. We've learned it's best to insist that soldiers and warriors either find a local lord or commander to be responsible for their behavior, or move on." He smiled as he said this. Pox wondered what was coming next. "Now you," he said, "are perhaps a special case. While Master Senneth, even for the council's peace of mind, won't divulge how much treasure you deposited with him, he has assured us that you will not need to rob anyone for the price of a meal before midwinter feast." A chuckle went around the table. Even the mason smiled. "So, since you've given honest account of yourself, we have less to worry about. Nonetheless, our tradition is clear. Since Sir Felis has no employment for you, we would not willingly have you stay too long idling about. That would mean more than a few weeks in your case. I understand that you've ordered goods from some of our local tradesmen. Certainly you may stay until they're completed, as long as nothing happens. On the other hand, we are prepared to offer you certain employment, the council is, I mean. If you took it, we would not consider you in the same class as an adventurer." Pox remembered Semonson's warning. "What sort of employment, sir, did you have in mind?" "Work suitable for your abilities and training, I believe, and so says Marshal Sedfer. I think Sir Felis would now concur, would you not?"
Sir Felis nodded.
"We have been plagued hereabouts with brigands preying on caravans in the region. You can understand why that is critical for us. We depend on their trade. Sir Felis has swept the area several times, finding nothing. He has direct orders from the Count to concentrate his time and men on the building of the keep north of town. We need someone to search out the brigands' hiding place and lead a force against them. None of us have the training, or, to be frank, the time to take away from our trades. Would you be willing to take this commission?"
Pox could not suppress a grin. It sounded like fun, at least the part about finding the brigands' camp. But as for killing or catching them...
"Sir, it is an interesting proposal, but whatever Marshal Sedfer may think, I am hardly able to defeat a band of brigands on my own."
"Not at all," said the mayor. "Of course not. We would expect you to lead a force, including some of the local militia, and you could confer, perhaps, with a marshal or Sir Felis on the best method for defeating them once you had found their camp."
Put that way, it sounded even more attractive. Whenever Pox thought of brigands, she thought of those who had killed Sabin and Kana. She nodded at the mayor.
"I have no love for brigands," she said. "I'll be glad to hunt them for you."
"Good. What we propose is this. We will authorize you to call on members of the local militia who have free time, and they, or the town, will supply their weapons. We will not pay you, but we will grant you a share of any recovered goods, and a head price for each robber killed or captured. If you need extraordinary aid, come to Marshal Sedfer, and he will arrange it as he sees fit. Is that satisfactory?"
Pox had no idea what such contracts were usually like, but it seemed reasonable. If many caravans had been robbed, surely the plunder would make a fair return.
"Yes," she said, "that will do. But do you have any idea where they might be?"
The mayor leaned forward.
"An idea, yes, but we aren't sure. Caravans have been attacked on all the roads around. But Eris..."
He nodded to the farm woman, who nodded to Pox.
"Eris tells us that farms have been robbed, too, and one or two wiped out west of here. None close in, but those farther out have lost livestock. There are several ruins out that way which might be useful to brigands, though Sir Felis found no one there."
"That's not to say they might not use them," Sir Felis broke in. "We've had no time for more than a fast sweep. They could have been hiding nearby if they were clever."
"We think," the mayor went on, "that they must have some spy in town. More caravans are robbed on their way out, especially those that have come on a market day and sold things in our market. I won't conceal the fact that these men, if it's humans, are dangerous. Typically, they kill all the caravanners, merchants, and guards alike. That's 10 to 20 guards, maybe 5 merchants or so, and the drivers. They've killed 2 farm families we know of. I suppose they surprised them, robbing... But... Sir Felis interrupted again. It may be that some farmer out there is in league with them.
Eris, Arvid's daughter, shook her head angrily. But Pox remembered the setup at Uncle's in Arrhenius. It would make sense.
Northwest of here, Sir Felis continued, was Baron Onseg's land, but he died without a close heir years ago, and the title of that land is still being argued in Varela. Once you're away from the river and well into the woods beyond Brewer's Bridge, there's no lord for 2 days' travel until Baron Velis is outside Bingham.
The merchants' guilds, put in the mayor, naturally have an interest in the safety of the roads. We have no guild league, as in Arrhenius, with real authority. But the guilds will support any effort to keep the roads safe, where no lord has the responsibility.
I see, said Pox. She was becoming confused again, and clung to what she did understand. So you want me to hunt around and find where the brigands are hiding, and lead a small force to drive them out? Do you want them driven away, or killed, or captured, or what?
Killed or captured, definitely, said Marshal Sedfer. Drive them out, and they'll return as soon as you're gone.
I say kill them, put in the mason. What good are brigands anyway?
Pox wondered if he'd ever killed anyone. Himself.
And if you find out who is, I mean, who may be giving information here in Brewer's Bridge, added the mayor.
Pox grinned. You expect a stranger to find out what's going on when you, who know everyone, can't?
I might be able to find the brigand, sir, and I know I can fight, but I've no experience in finding out secrets like that.
Well, but if you should happen to learn...
I would tell... Marshal Sedfer, you wished me to report to, is that right?
Yes, that's right, or me, but Marshal Sedfer is best.
Pox looked around the table. Everyone was watching her. The mage gave her a bright smile, as if to encourage her. The marshal and Sir Felis looked impatient, as if she were a slightly stupid recruit. Master Oakhallow's level gaze held a challenge. She felt, suddenly, very tired. To fight brigands was well enough, and she'd be glad of an honest, above-ground battle again. But she had the feeling that they all expected something else, something more.
Yes, she said finally. I'll do that, or try to. I suppose the first thing is to look for the places they might be.
Do you have a map, perhaps, of the local?
But at that, they all began to talk. How good of you! No need for that tonight, now that you've... Perhaps tomorrow you can meet with Marshal Sedfer, out to the keep, and I'll introduce you to my sergeants.
The mayor banged his gavel once, and everyone quieted.
One last thing. The town, as I said, will supply the militia, their food, and weapons. But do you have what you need for yourself? I see you have armor.
He waited for her answer. Pox thought about her gear. To move about the countryside, as far as he had mentioned, a day's ride away, she would need a horse of some kind.
I could use a horse or mule, she said. My pony's not the right animal for prowling around.
Sir Felis frowned.
I haven't any spares right now. We've thrush in the stable, and horses lame.
The mayor shook his head.
It's so late in the season, the horses in town now are workhorses, and in use every day. Marshal Sedfer?
Nope, sorry, my own mount, and Ambrose's, that's all I've got. If you wanted to buy one, perhaps Sir Felis could send to the Count's stable.
There's one spare horse, said Heavenford, in my stable, that black horse.
Pox felt a surge of excitement. She had not thought of the black, but that was the sort of horse she had dreamed of in the past, a true warrior's horse. She looked at the mare, and Heavenford, and back again.
What about that one, then? No one else is using it.
I suppose that's all right, said the mayor slowly. I can see you need a horse to go looking all over the country. If the rest of you agree...
What of the man's heirs? Asked Master Fedith. He looked a friendless man, but if he had heirs, they'd have some right to the beast.
What of the fines he'd have owed for trying to rob our Master Smith, if he'd lived?
Asked Seneth sharply.
I say the council can claim his horse for damages and sell it to Poxenarian if we choose.
Perhaps, sirs, said Pox, uncertain if she should speak, I could but have the use of the horse at first, paying Master Hebbenford for his keep, of course. It may be that I have not the skill to master such an animal. She paused, as the smith snorted loudly, and all eyes went to him. Even if I do, I will not need it after this, I think.
That's well spoke, said the smith abruptly. 'Twould do that beast good to be worked, that it would, and the trying of him out would be a reason for her to ride about the countryside. But as for skill...
He looked hard at Pox.
You've either skill of a horsebreaker girl, or magic in your fingers, and that's a fact.
Pox saw both the Quatkin and the Marshal give her hands a quick glance. She was glad they were clasped to cover the ring.
Well then, said the mayor. How think you? I see no harm in that, and it saves Master Hebbenford risking his own neck to keep the beast exercised, for I doubt you'd let Severy try it, would you, Jose?
Never,
said Hebbenford, with a ghost of a grin.
Nor is my lass that crazy. I'm for it.
And I, said the other council members.
And I hope you'll decide to buy that horse, said Seneth, as they rose. If you go and leave it here, the council will be left with a care of it all winter until the spring fairs. We'll give you a good price, I swear.
We can do better than that, Seneth, said the mayor, clapping him on the shoulder. Should she succeed in routing all the brigands, we might call it a reward. Then she could not refuse, and we need not worry about the feed.
The others laughed, and gathered around Pox for a few words each before leaving. When she had retrieved her sword from the guard at the door, she found Hebbenford and the Quatkin waiting to walk with her. The night had turned even colder, and she looked forward to the new cloak the tailor would make. Chapter 12. After so late a night, Pox would have been glad to sleep later than usual, but anticipation of the black horse woke her at dawn. Could she ride it? She felt sure of the power of the ring, but once mounted, she could not concentrate on her ring finger. She knew she should be thinking of the brigands, and less of the horse, but the black horse fit her old dream of adventure so perfectly. She could almost see herself riding through admiring crowds. She had hoped to work with it in privacy first, but early as it was, everyone in the inn seemed to have business in the stable yard. She began with grooming. The beast had nearly caught Severy with a massive hoof, and after that his owner had done it. Pox kept her thumb firmly on the ring as she picked up a brush and eased into the stall by its head. The ears were alert, but not flattened, and the great dark eye watched her calmly as the horse worked on its ration of grain. There now, crooned Pox, setting the brush to that massive shoulder. There, quiet. Stay calm, black one. She began to brush, more gently than would do for a thorough grooming, and with a wary eye on the ears. The horse stood taller and more heavily built than the Duke's war horses, as tall as Arcalan's favorite. She worked her way along the ribs, the croup, the rump. Dust and scurf flew. The horse had not been well groomed for some time. She brushed down the haunches, saw them tense, and concentrated on the ring for a moment. Nothing's wrong, horse. I won't hurt you. Quiet now. Easy. Bunched muscles relaxed. She saw the fetlock sink deeper in the straw.
You'd like to be out of here, wouldn't you? Go for a ride? Out in the open air, along the roads? Good horse.
Soon she had brushed both sides. The belly, another pause for the ring's action there, brushed out the heavy, tangled mane. She looked up and saw Severy's awed face over the stall wall.
I didn't think you could really do it, said Severy.
Pox grinned at her, thumb firm on the ring.
I wasn't sure I could myself. Can you bring me a pick?
You're going to touch his feet.
Pox shrugged.
What if he has a stone? If he's taken this much, he should take that.
Severy handed over a hoof pick.
I just finished Star, here.
Pox leaned down beside the near four, impressed again by the size of those platter-like hooves.
Come on, black one, let's have a hoof.
She could feel the tension above her,
and glanced up to see the horse watching, ears stiffly turned back. No. Come on now. She pinched the tendons, as she'd been taught, wondering briefly if she should have done this outside a stall just in case. But the hoof came up at last, and she cleaned around the frog with her pick. The other front hoof went as well. But as she bent to touch the near hind, the horse squealed and slammed a kick into the stall wall, narrowly missing her. Pox thought a loud no through the ring, and the horse froze, trembling. She could see the cracked board where the hoof struck, and heard a murmur of voices at the stable door. Sevri urged the watchers away. Slowly, concentrating on the ring, Pox slid her hand down the hind leg, over slick black hide to the white feather below the hock, and through that heavy hair felt along to the fetlock. The scar was hidden by the thick hair above it, a deep scar, and still sensitive, for the horse blew a rattling breath, despite the ring's compulsion, as she touched it. Pox straightened.
Easy.
I'd warrant you have another on the offside as well. No wonder you don't like having your legs handled. I wonder what did that. Nothing good. Well, perhaps we can leave that a day until you trust me more. She came back to the horse's head and scratched under his jaw until the strange look left his eyes. Surely the smith didn't do that. Holding you to shoe you? The horse relaxed enough to stretch its neck. Pox slipped out of the stall, shaking a little with the strain of using the ring for so long.
Will you ride today?
Asked Sevri, who was waiting by the door. He needs exercise, said Pox, but he's got some injury to his back legs. That's why he's so touchy, I think. I hate to ride him out until I can handle those legs, but he's had as much as he can take for now, maybe later. Pox went in to breakfast, trying to ignore the curious looks of the others. If she was going to lead a group out against brigands and train a horse, she needed several things from the shops. She made a list during breakfast and asked Hebbenford where she could find some of the items. When she returned, everyone seemed to be out of the way but Sevri.
If you want me to leave as well, she said shyly.
No, but don't get too close. I don't know what he'll do. Tur's bones. I don't even know how to rig that saddle. She went into the stable. The black horse nosed over the stall wall. She had not yet touched the ring. Perhaps it was not a true outlaw. Sevri brought the bridle, red leather decorated with copper rings, tarnished green. The reins were broad and heavy, and the bit. Pox shook her head.
I can't use that. Look at those spikes, Sevri. The war horses we see here all have bits like that, said Sevri. Are you sure?
I'm sure of this. I won't use that bit. The Duke didn't use anything like that. Where can I buy another one?
You can use my father's old one, if it'll do. He had a hauling team once, before he sold it to a caravanner that was short. Try this.
Sevri brought out an old, rusty-linked bit, like those Pox had seen on cart horses. While Sevri shook it in a sandbag to get the rust off, Pox worked at the stiff lacings of the bridle. At last she had the old bit off, and the smooth one in place.
If he's used to that mess in his mouth, he won't take the bit easily, said Pox. Let's see.
And as she walked up with the bridle, the black horse threw up its head, snorting. Again she thumbed the ring, which quieted the noise. Sevri darted off for an apple.
Will this work?
It might. Pox was glad of anything that would conceal the action of the ring. She offered it, concentrating on the ring, and in a moment slid the bit in place, and the crown piece over the horse's ears as its teeth crunched the apple. She waited to fasten the noseband and throat latch until the apple was finished, and the last lumps passed down the black throat.
I hope you can hold him with that, said Sevri doubtfully.
With what? Came a brisk voice from the door, and they all jumped. Pox clenched her left hand on the ring and turned. Marshal Sedfer stood there, with Ambrose just behind him.
She changed bits, said Sevri, before Pox could think what to say. She wouldn't use that old one.
She nudged it with her toe, where it lay in the aisle.
That's a mouthful indeed, said the marshal, picking it up. But what are you using instead, Poxenarian? That magic doggle mentioned?
No, said Sevri again. It's one of my father's old bits, a smooth one, that he used when he had a team. But I thought war horses had to have spiked bits.
The marshal's face relaxed.
Good, Poxenarian, very good. No, Sevri, a horse can be trained to any bit, but the smooth ones are better. Hasty warriors try to use rough bits instead of training to get their horse's attention. A good horseman uses as smooth a bit as he may.
He took a step forward to look at the horse more closely.
As I recall, Duke Phelan's troops use horses for transport only. I'm sure you ride, perhaps well, but I thought I could help you with the commands peculiar to war horses.
Thank you, Marshal, said Pox. I realized this morning that even the saddles we used are not like this one. She gestured at the heavy saddle with its tangle of rigging on a peg nearby.
You haven't cleaned it yet, said the Marshal, frowning.
No, sir. Pox flushed, as if Stammel had found her with dirty equipment.
Clean tack, Poxenarian, is very important. Sevri, bring us a fresh pad, at least. Lead him out to the yard, Poxenarian.
With her hand clenched around the ring, Pox led the black horse out. He followed as calmly as Star, for which she was grateful. Her neck prickled as she placed the sheepskin pad. The marshal handed her the saddle.
I see you know how to work with a bridled horse. See, Ambrose? She's got her arm in the rein, just as I keep telling you. Now, Poxenarian, let me explain all those extra straps.
Pox needed the help, but wished it were someone else.
That, yes, that one, is the foregirth. Fasten it first. Good. Now the breastband. See those hooks on the saddle? Yes. Not tight, just lying smoothly. That's so the saddle cannot slip back under any strain. Now, the rest of that. By Gerd himself. That fellow didn't know how to stow his gear. Roll that mess slowly out over his rump. Be careful, girl. Yes. Now, see that loop on top? The tail goes through that. Wait, though.
The marshal moved to the horse's rump and felt of the loop.
Heh. I might have known. Feel this. It's too stiff. It's probably rubbed him raw already. We'll take all this off.
And he began to work at fastenings on the back of the saddle as he talked.
You don't really need it yet. Oil and clean it. Get it all soft. And I'll show you how to put it back on. In a fight or traveling in rough country, it keeps the saddle from slipping forward, just like the breeching strap on a pack animal.
He went to the other side and finished there.
Here, Sevri, take these away.
He watched as Pox checked the stirrup length. She left it unchanged.
Do you want me to hold him while you mount?
Pox looked at the horse, which suddenly seemed much taller, yet she had ridden Arkelin's horse that once. Her mouth was dry. If the marshal had not been there, she could have led the horse to a field, where she could hope to land soft. Instead, she sighed inwardly and thanked him.
I must admit, sir, that this is the biggest horse.
You've ridden, he finished. Yes, I thought it might be.
He took the rein, and the horse stiffened. Pox got her foot in the stirrup and tried to swing up, but the horse shifted suddenly with her weight. She fell into the saddle with an ungraceful scramble. It was built high and close to her body. She had almost landed on and not in it.
With a horse like this, said the marshal, you need to be quicker, or else train him to stand.
He stepped back, releasing the rein, as Pox straightened. The saddle felt strange, as if it were hovering over the horse's back, and the ground looked very far away. Pox nudged the horse lightly with her heels, and it lunged forward. She thumbed the ring, thinking, easy, and it settled again, ears flicking. Pox saw eyes at the inn door and cursed silently. She could feel the horse tensing under her, the hump in its back that kept the saddle too high.
Settle down, horse, she said softly. Settle down, and we'll go for a walk somewhere.
It took one stiff step, then another. She laid the rein against its neck to turn it around the dung heap, and it whirled on its hind legs, almost unseating her.
Easy, she said.
Arkelin's horse had been nothing like this. For a moment, she longed for gentle little Star, but she was conscious of the marshal and Ambrose watching. She was a warrior, and this was a warrior's horse. If she was ever to be a knight, she talked the horse forward, hardly daring to touch it with her heels. Nearly to the cow byre, she had to turn. Again the light touch of rein and the lightning spin, but this time she was ready for it.
You might see what happens if you pull one rein lightly, called the marshal. Those that are trained to spin on one cue usually turn slowly on the other.
Pox tried a gentle pull, and the horse veered left. It walked more freely now, and she finally managed a circle around the stable yard.
Now, the other way, commanded the marshal.
This too went well, though Pox could still feel a knot of tension in the horse's back. They walked around the yard once, then twice. She pulled back for a halt, feeling more confident, and the horse reared. Pox lurched backward and grabbed for mane. Someone in the inn door laughed and cut it off. The horse stayed up, and stayed up. She felt like a fool. How could she get him down? She closed her legs, and the horse leaped forward, snapping her head back. It landed charging, whirling about the stable yard as Pox fought to stay on. The saddle, so uncomfortable before, seemed to grip her. She could hear frantic yells and the clatter of shod hooves on stone. At last, she remembered the ring and thought, "Whoa!" The horse skidded to a stop and stood rigid. Pox was breathless. Pain stabbed her side, and her hands were shaking. She had been sure she'd fall. It was hard to believe anything so ponderous had moved so fast. It had seemed easy when she'd seen others riding. She grinned at the memory. "You can stay on, at least." The marshal's voice broke into her thoughts. "But that beast may still be too much for you. Best not to ride through town until you have better control."
I won't, sir. I had no idea."
"Not well trained, either." The marshal was walking around the horse. "He's got the makings of a fine animal, Poxenarian, but he's been ill-trained, and I would judge ill-used. If you can retrain him, you'll have a formidable mount."
"I'm not sure," said Pox ruefully, "that I'll be able to figure out how to ride down the road, let alone fight on him."
"You're a long way from that, but a stable yard is not the best place to learn. If you can get him as far as the Grange, you can ride in the drill fields behind, and I'll be glad to instruct you. If you go behind the inn and ride south of town, there's a ford upstream of the bridge."
"Thank you," said Pox. "I'll try. But how will I stop him? If a pull on the reins doesn't work, what will?"
"May I try?"
"Of course, sir."
Pox slid off, finding it harder than she'd thought to clear the unfamiliar saddle. She held the rein for the marshal, who mounted in one smooth motion. As she stepped back, the black horse exploded in a fit of bucking. Pox flattened herself beside Ambrose, near the stable door, appalled at the unleashed power.
"Don't worry," said Ambrose. "The marshal's good with horses."
And indeed, after scattering a good part of the dunghill over the yard, the horse trotted stiffly around, neck bowed, obedient to the marshal's rein and legs. Pox could not see what the marshal had done when the horse stopped, but he told her.
"To halt, you'll need to stiffen your back and sit back slightly. That's all. Right now I wouldn't use the rein at all. We can retrain him later. Think you can manage?"
Pox wasn't at all sure, but she nodded. She would try, at least. The marshal swung off as easily as he'd mounted, and handed her the rein. He grinned, after a look around the stable yard, and spoke to Ambrose.
"Well, I made a considerable mess, didn't I? We'd best get at it, Ambrose, if we want to keep our welcome."
"No, Marshal, that's all right."
Severy looked dismayed, nonetheless.
"No, it isn't. Ambrose and I will take care of it."
And to Pox's surprise, and the obvious surprise of other watchers, the marshal took the shovel from Severy, and Ambrose found another. They began shoveling the scattered dung back into a heap. Pox led the black horse back to his stall, and returned with another shovel to help. The marshal smiled, but said nothing as he worked. Soon the yard was tidy once more. "There now." The marshal wiped sweat from his forehead, and handed Severy the shovel. "Poxenarian, early morning is a good time to train horses. Bring him along after feeding tomorrow."
"Yes, sir."
Pox hoped she wouldn't be thrown before she got to the Grange. The marshal waved and left. Only after he was gone did she realize that she now had a perfect excuse to ride around the countryside and spend hours with the marshal. No one would wonder, after hearing about the black horse's performance, why she rode alone, or why she went to the Grange every day. By that afternoon, the tailor's wife had one shirt ready for her to try on. Pox would gladly have taken it then, but the woman insisted that she must do more work.
"See on the inside, lady? The edges there? I'll turn those down, and they'll not ravel or be rough." "But, nay, we're proud of our work, my husband and me. We won't let such as this leave our hands, but I'll have it tomorrow by lunchtime, and the other plain shirts in 2 days, unless you'd rather have the trousers first."
Pox thought of all the riding she'd be doing, and asked for the trousers next. Outside the shop, she headed for the saddler's and bought a jug of the heavy oil he used on his leathers. In Doggle's yard, she found the smith forging heavy wagon fittings and waited outside until he paused. The next morning, she was able to bridle and saddle the black horse without help, but with constant support from the ring. Sevri offered to hold the rein, but Pox feared the horse might hurt her. Instead, she faced him into a corner. Her attempt at a quick mount felt as rough as the day before, but she had gained the saddle before he moved out from under her. She pulled the left rein gently, and he turned toward the gate. Once out from between the walls, the horse seemed slightly calmer. Pox turned him along a path between the back of the inn yard and a cottage garden, and then through the fields behind the village. She found the ford the marshal had spoken of by following a cow path, and the black horse pranced gingerly through the swift shallows, rocks rolling under his hooves. Now she had reached the lower end of the Grange drill field. She could see the marshal standing near the Grange. Ambrose, mounted on a rangy bay, rode around the barton wall from the street as she came up.
"You made it safely, I see," said the marshal. "Ambrose rides 3 times a week, and this will give both of you practice in riding with others."
Pox said nothing. The black horse had laid his ears back flat at the sight of the other horse. In the next few days, Pox acquired a whole new set of bruises. The marshal was as hard a riding master as Siger had been in weapons training. Like all occasional riders, Pox hated to trot, but the marshal insisted that they trot most of the time. He was particular about the placement of her feet, the way she held the rein, the angle of her head. But the black horse no longer jumped out from under her. She could control his pace and stop him, turn and return, without difficulty. Much of the time, she did not need the action of the ring, except for grooming and mounting. She could ride along the roads now and spent several hours a day learning where they led. The marshal had told her that such quiet, slow work was excellent for a high-strung mount. But at night, she dreamed of the snow cat and woke, sweaty and trembling. Once it was the black horse's neck that Messenian hacked at instead of the cat. Another time, a shadowy spotted creature followed her along the trails she'd ridden that day, disappearing when she tried to turn on it. Every time she used the ring on the horse, she felt a pang of remorse. At last, she decided to talk to the Quokkin about it. This time, as she came inside of the clearing, she saw the Quokkin talking to another near the fountain. Uncertain, she paused. She could hear nothing from where she stood, and wondered whether to intrude or go back. She turned to look the way she had come and froze. No path lay behind her. The white stones that should have marked one had disappeared, and a tree rose inches from her back. She shuddered, sweat springing out on her neck and back, crawling down her ribs. She looked forward, and the clearing was open before her. Master Oakhallow beckoned. She saw no one else. Pox took a deep breath and stepped out of the trees. As she came nearer the fountain, she felt the quiet deepen. She laid the oatcake Heavenford had given her in the basin.
"It is well,"
said Master Oakhallow in his deep voice,
"that you did not try to leave again. The unsteady of purpose find my grove unsettling."
"Sir, it is not that," said Pox, "but you were speaking to another. I would not intrude." He smiled.
"Your courtesy is appreciated, but you could not have come nearer than I wished. Enough. You came with a purpose. What troubles you?"
Pox did not want to meet his eyes. "Sir, I did not take the time to tell you all that happened on our way across the mountains."
"You had no need to tell me all, or anything you would not," he interrupted. "But you shied from some part of your tale, and it speaks in your eyes yet. Is it this you came for?"
Pox felt her heart begin to hammer against her ribs. She wished she had gone to Marshal Sedfer. She wished she had done nothing at all. From everything she had heard of the Quokgani, their deep love of wild things, their distaste for men's arts, their contempt for war and soldiery, she was in danger now. Danger against which her sword was no protection. She ducked her head lower yet. "Yes, sir, it is. I did something, sir, and I don't know what to do."
"Are you sure," he asked, "that I am the one you wish to talk to?" You have spent much time lately with Marshal Sedfer. You are not Quaqanir. I have no claim on your actions.
I'm sure, said Pox, fighting the tremor in her voice. It has to do with the elf and wild things, and he, Marshal Sedfer, he would think it silly, I think.
By elf, I presume you mean Messenian? Yes, and wild things. I doubt, Poxenarian, that he would think it silly, but I am more used to dealing with those than he. Now.
His voice sharpened a little, and Pox flinched at the tone.
If you can spit out your tail, child, and let us see what it is, perhaps I can be of some use.
Pox took a deep breath, and began haltingly to tell of the night in the pass. The Quaqan did not interrupt or prompt her. When she told of the coming of the Snow Cat, she felt through the bones of her head the sharpening of his gaze and struggled on. Then he, Messenian, told me to use the ring.
The ring?
His voice might have been stone from the weight of it. Pox held out her hand and withdrew it. This ring, sir. He said it was made to control animals. She explained how she had caught Messenian's horse, and how that had upset him, how he had cast a spell to identify any magic item, and had found her ring.
You did not know that before?
No, sir. I thought the horse came because, well, I like horses. Star always came to me.
So you had a ring made to control animals, and you used it on a horse without knowing its power. Where did you get it?
From the Duke, sir. He gave it to me at Dwarfwatch last year for bringing the word to him. Suddenly tears ran from her eyes as she thought of the honor of that ring and how she'd used it.
Did he know what it was, do you think?
No, sir. It was part of the plunder from Siniava's army that we'd beaten. He said he chose it for the form. The three strands for the three of us that went.
The others?
Died, sir. She expected him to ask about that, but he did not. Instead, he returned to her original story.
So then you were faced with the Snow Cat. Had you heard of one before? No. And Messenian told you to use the ring. How?
He said, sir, to make the cat hold still, not jump at us or the horses. And it worked. Pox could feel in memory the surprise of that. She had really believed her ring was magic, until the great beast crouched motionless on the trail before them, the snowflake dapples on its coat blending with the falling snow. And then he told me how dangerous it was.
You didn't see that for yourself?
The Quatkin's voice was edged with sarcasm. Sir, I could see that it was a hunting creature and big, but it was so beautiful. I didn't know about the magic it had until Messenian told me. He said we had no chance, and... Pox faltered again.
Go on.
The Quaqan was implacable. He told me to hold it still, and... Pox squeezed her eyes shut against the memory, and he took his sword and killed it.
There was a long silence.
Pox dared not move or speak. Her skin prickled all over.
You held it still, by magic, while Messenian killed it? Helpless?
Yes, sir, said Pox faintly. I knew it was wrong. I asked him...
What?
The word shook the ground with power. I asked him not to, whispered Pox, but he said it was the only way. Then, and I shouldn't have, sir. I know that, but what can I do now?
Another long silence. And men wonder,
the Quaqan said finally, in a quiet voice worse than a shout,
why evil roams the land. I should hope you knew it was wrong. Wrong, yes, bitterly wrong. And I assure you, Poxenarian, that Marshal Sedfer would not think light of this. It was an evil deed, and whatever else they may be, the Marshals of Gerd abhor evil. Do you claim as your defense that it was Messenian's fault because he told you to do so?
No, sir, said Pox. I should have thought. He told me later, when I spoke of it, that I could have used the power to send the beast away.
Messenian said that? After telling you to do it in the first place?
Yes, sir. I know it was my doing. I know it was wrong, but what now? I thought you would know what to do.
To make amends?
Pox nodded. I thought even I had dishonored my sword. I should give it up, if you said so, not be a warrior. She had come to that, after dreaming that the victim had been the black horse.
Look at me.
Pox could not resist the command, and met the Kwakan's dark eyes, her own blurred with tears. He looked every bit as angry as she had expected.
You would give that up? Your own craft in the world? You take the injury so seriously?
Yes. Pox fought again for control of her voice. Sir, it was wrong. I have not slept well since. How can I be what I want if I could do that?
But you are a soldier, he mused. I judge you are a good one, as soldiers go. Have you any other skill?
No, sir.
I think, then, that you must stay so. Kwakgani do not hate soldiers, but the necessity of war. If you have dishonored your sword, you must cleanse it with honorable battles. As for amends, the Snow Cat is dead, and by now the eagles have feasted. Nothing can change that.
He looked closely at her, and Pox nodded.
As I said, I have no responsibility for your actions, but if you will be bound by me, I will take a blood payment from you. Give me the ring with which you bound the Snow Cat, so that you cannot misuse such power again.
Pox froze. Give up this ring? Her hand closed on it. She could hear the Duke's voice as he gave it, feel the throb in her injured leg.
I will not compel, said the Kwakin.
She could feel, however, the withdrawal behind his words. She unclenched her hand, staring at the ring's twisted strands that meant so much more than power over animals. Then she pulled it from her finger, feeling the tiny ridges for the last time, and laid it in the Kwakin's waiting palm. His hand closed over it. She felt a cold wave sweep through her heart. That ring she had never meant to lose, save with her life.
Child, look at my face.
She looked again. He was smiling gravely.
You did well, Paxenarian. I think the evil was not rooted too deeply in you, and this may have it out. Choose your companions with more care another time, and trust your own honor more. No one can preserve it but you.
Yes, sir.
Go now. You have much to do. If you would accomplish what the council set you, and train that black horse you've been busy with.
Pox started. She had forgotten until then that she had been using the ring on the black horse. The Kwakin gave her an open grin.
We will see whether Massinian was right, and all your skill with horses mere ring magic. I think myself you have a way with animals, ring or no, and you can trust yourself now. Is it not so?
Yes, sir. Suddenly Pox felt much better. She had not known how much it bothered her to control the horse with the ring.
You may take a few extra bruises, but I heard from Sevri the care you gave your pack pony when you arrived. Such care, Paxenarian, and not magic, will accomplish what you hope for.
He took her shoulders and turned her away from the fountain.
And there's your path out. Don't stray from it. And don't look back.
Thank you, sir, said Pox. She walked toward the white stones, and along them to the lane. Lighter in heart, Pox headed for the inn, thinking of what had passed. Her finger felt sore and empty without her ring. She would not have bartered it for food if she had been starving, but the Duke, she felt, would rather have had her give it up than keep it in dishonor. She turned aside from the inn door,
and went around by the stable yard. Severy was currying a trader's heavy cart horse outside. Pox went into the stable. Star pushed her head up over the stall side, and Pox scratched her absently, watching the black. He seemed more relaxed. He stood at ease, nose resting on the stall door, tail switching at intervals. Pox fed Star half an apple and took the rest to him. He stiffened as she neared the stall, then caught the scent of apple. Pox held it on the flat of her hand. His nostrils quivered, his lip twitched. Slowly he reached out and lifted it from her palm. She reached up and scratched him, just as she would Star. Still crunching, he leaned into the caress. Pox murmured to him, the meaningless, friendly talk that soothes, and watched his eyes slide shut. She heard Severy behind her in the aisle, leading the cart horse to its stall. All at once, Pox decided what to do. Severy?
Yes, do you need something?
Only to tell you something. Pox paused. It wasn't going to be easy. She liked the girl.
Severy, I haven't been fair with you.
The girl's face was puzzled. The smith was right, Severy, about this horse. I was using magic on him to quiet him.
What kind of magic?
She seemed more interested than surprised. A ring. It worked to quiet animals, to control them. That's why I could work with him at all.
Oh. Are you using it now? Which ring is it?
Pox spread her hand. I don't have it anymore. It was the gold one. I'm sorry, Severy, I should have told you.
Why? All horse trainers have their secrets. And you weren't using it to hurt him. What happened to your ring? Was it stolen?
No. I gave it to Master Oakhallow. Pox was surprised at the girl's reaction.
But, Severy, your family are Quatganir, aren't they? I thought you would think it wrong.
Severy shrugged.
I don't think you needed it. Master Oakhallow says the heart shows in all things. You were always kind to Star and the Black, and that's what works with horses. If you used the ring to quiet him until he could trust you, it shortened your work, that's all.
Pox felt a wave of relief. She had feared the girl's disapproval more than she knew.
I thought you should know, that's all. I'm glad you trust me, said Severy seriously, older than her years. But I wouldn't tell those others. Let them think what they will. If they knew you'd had one magic ring, they might come looking for others. I learned that working here in the inn.
I hadn't thought of that, said Pox. Thank you. But now I suppose we might as well see how the training is gone and bring him out. To her surprise, the black horse was no worse than any other morning. Pox had just finished grooming him and turned to reach for the saddle when she saw the Quatkin beside her.
You are doing well with him, said the Quatkin.
Pox could find nothing in his voice but polite interest.
Have you been able to cure the injuries he received earlier?
Pox laid a hand on the horse's shoulder to steady herself. She had not thought to see the Quatkin again so soon. Her breath came short.
Sir, his mouth healed quickly, but there's one thing. He has deep scars on his hind legs, and I don't know what can be done for them.
I'll take a look.
At the Quatkin's touch, the horse relaxed even more, and did not flinch even when the Quatkin ran his strong hands down the hind legs. He paused when he came to the scar on the near leg.
A rope or wire cut him deeply here. It's a wonder he was not crippled by it. The wound healed cleanly, but the scar has grown to hamper the action of the joint a little. Do you find he sometimes seemed to drag his hoof there?
Pox shook her head. I've never seen it myself, but Marshal Sedfer says he does so when I'm training with him.
Perhaps I can ease that for him.
Pox did not see him do anything, but he laid his hand over the scar a long moment, and then on the other leg.
No,
he said, as he straightened up.
I would see you ride, young woman.
Pox felt her belly clench. Would he make the horse rear and buck, run away? She was sure he could do that. Or would he criticize what Marshal Sedfer had taught her? Her fingers felt huge and clumsy as she set the saddle on the horse's back, arranged the crupper and breastband, girthed up and bridled. The Quatkin inspected the tack, running the leather through his hands, touching the bit with his fingers. At last, there was nothing to do but mount. The horse had picked up Pox's tension and stiffened his ears, but he stood still while she gained the saddle. Once up, habit reasserted itself, and she gave to the horse's movement. She rode around the stable yard twice, then made a few circles and other figures around the dung heap. She looked at the Quokkan. He gestured for her to ride outside. Pox sighed, nodded, and guided the black through the gate. The Quokkan led her out of town eastward. Pox followed, the black horse stepping along lightly. He turned as she caught up with him.
"I think you have done well so far," he said. "Ride ahead now, and turn back when you come to the edge of the grove."
Pox nudged the horse into a slow trot, halted, and turned where she was bid and rode back.
"He should have no more trouble with those scars," said the Quokkan. "He's moving easier. Could you feel it?"
"It seems springier, somehow."
"Yes, and he will be able to do some of those fancy things the marshal would like to teach you. Too bad they're used for fighting only. If it did not risk his death or yours, I'd be happier about it."
He smiled up at her.
"But you and he were meant to be so, perhaps. I wish you well, Paxanarian. You may come again to the grove if you wish. You have a definite talent with animals. That is in part what hurt you so when you misused it."
He waved and turned away. Pox sat still, and watched him cross the road and enter the grove by leaping the wall. She almost called a warning, then realized that it would hold no perils for him. He had disappeared among the trees when she lifted the reins and rode to the Grange, along the street, for the first time. Chapter 13 In the next few days, Pox rode along most of the roads near town, and began to explore the small lanes and paths that led to outlying farmsteads. She found nothing. She was not even sure what she was looking for, but at least, she thought, she had a better idea of the surrounding land. It was richer than the land around Three Firs. Most farm folk had an orchard of apples and pears. For grain, they grew wheat, as well as northern barley and oats. Red roots, onions, and other vegetables grew in every kitchen garden. Pox saw the local hogs, hefty red beasts with yellow eyes, rooting in the roadside woods and hedges. Sleek, dun-colored cattle with dark horns grazed the pastures. Then, returning to Brewer's Bridge on the west road one afternoon, she got her first clue. Low sun, behind her, threw her shadow far ahead. In that slanting light, she saw something glint on a tree trunk beside the road. She rode toward it, suddenly alert. As she came nearer, she saw that it was nothing but the tree itself. Instead of dark, furrowed bark, pale underbark lay open to the sun from a narrow gash. Pox halted the black horse, her brow furrowed in thought. She'd heard of such signs. The scouts in the Duke's company had had a system of marks on trees and wayside rocks. But she had no idea what this one meant, if indeed it were anything but an accident. She turned the black horse off the road and made a half-circle in the woods around the marked tree. Nothing but a game trail that ended a few yards from the road. She came out to the road again and thought about it. Game trail? Why would a game trail stop suddenly? She had seen others that crossed the road. Her neck prickled, and she looked around at the silent trees. Nothing. She thought of returning to the mysterious trail, but decided to ride on, as if she had found nothing. As she jogged on toward town, she heard a distant call off to her right, a herdsman, perhaps, or perhaps someone else. That night was drill night again. Pox drank a quick bowl of soup in the crowded common room, then went upstairs to change. When she came downstairs, the tall young man she'd noticed the first day in the common room called to her.
"Lady Pox, going to drill? Walk with us, why don't you?"
His grin was nearly as wide as his shoulders. Two other men, that Pox remembered but vaguely from the first night's drill, smiled at her. Pox nodded at them. She wondered who they were.
"I'm Moll Argonist," said the one who had called her. "I'm the forester here, since my brother went away. I saw you the day you came in."
"Amisi," said the dark one at his side.
"I'm a farmer just east there, beyond the grove, those grain fields."
"Adgan," said the redhead. "I work for Amisi right now."
He's my senior herdsman.
They're just learning sword drill, said Mal. I told them they should use an axe, but...
Mal, for Gerd's sake, don't start on that.
What?
Asked Pox. Axes. Mal thinks everyone should fight with an axe. It's all right for him, as big as he is, and using an axe every day, but...
Information?
Pox tried to imagine it. She knew that some knights fought with small axes, but she'd never heard of a foot soldier using one.
Nah, not formation exactly, Mal laughed loudly. It's a right girdish weapon, that's all, being taken from our tools, you see. I've killed Wolf with it.
With an axe? Pox stared at him.
Oh, aye. Just you swing it from side to side, see, like the Master Smith does his hammer, that's all. It's the very thing. Won't break like a sword will.
He laughed again. And Pox eyed him narrowly. If she'd seen him in a tavern in Arrhenius, she'd have thought him a stupid lout. He was 2 fingers taller than she, and built like an ale barrel. She'd seen him drain a tankard at one swallow, yet he didn't move like a drunkard, and his great arms showed solid muscle. Several more yeomen had joined them, hurrying out of side lanes. For a few moments, Pox felt almost at home, almost as if she were going somewhere with Stammel and other friends. Then one of them nudged another and spoke.
Is it true, lady, that the council has hired you?
Pox was too surprised to make a good pretense of ignorance.
Why do you ask? She said finally. Well, you've got money enough, that's obvious, and you make no sign of leaving. Could be you bribed them, or could be they hired you.
Dorian!
Mal's bellow startled Pox as much as the statement.
Don't yell at me, Mal. I've a right to ask as much as anyone.
Dorian shifted away from Mal nonetheless and winked at Pox. He was middle-aged, slightly stooped, and she had no idea what his trade was.
If you don't want to say, that's all right, just asking.
Pox thought what she could say. The council had not told her to keep her mission quiet, but she had planned to say nothing. How else could she find the spy they thought lived in Brewersbridge? The council decided, she said, that I was no threat to the peace here. I had ordered goods, and they gave me leave to stay until these were made up. They did say you'd had trouble with brigands attacking caravans. Since I have been a soldier, they asked me to consider leading some volunteers against them.
Ha!
Mal grunted, and rubbed his neck as he walked. Have to find them first, don't you? We all know they're out there, but no one's seen them.
But who would go with you?
Asked Dorian. He had an irritating whine in his voice.
We don't know you, the militia don't. And they don't think you could fight all those brigands alone, do they?
Pox answered Mal first. You're right. No one can say where they are. I don't even know where to start looking. If I ever get that black horse tamed down...
I've seen you riding out, said Odgon. One time I saw him shy and you nearly went over his ears.
Pox blushed, grateful for the evening gloom.
Yes, the marshal's teaching me, but I still fall off now and then. Anyway, I thought I could ride around and look for the brigands that way, but not until I can look at something besides his ears.
You rode through town today, said Dorian.
Pox began to dislike him very much.
Yes, she said shortly. You don't want to go looking for brigands alone, said Mal more quietly than she'd heard him speak.
What if you found them?
I'd ride away, said Pox, very quickly.
That's right, you're not a guardsman,
Dorian managed to sneer. Before Pox could react, Amisi and Odgon took him up on it.
Dorian, that's stupid. What's she to do, be hogstuck by 12 brigands? That's not Gerd's way. You know the marshal says guardsmen have to think as well as fight.
I still think, began Dorian. Mal punched his shoulder hard enough to make him gasp.
Dorian, you don't think, you just talk. The Lady Pox is our guest in the Grange, and if you treat her like this, she never will join the Fellowship. We've all seen her drill. We know she'd be a good guardsman. Marshall hopes she'll join the Grange, and so do I. Leave her be, man. You haven't caught any brigands yourself.
By this time, they were approaching the Barton Gate. This time, the boy on guard recognized Pox and grinned at her as she entered. Drill went much as before, with most of her time spent teaching the few swordsmen to use short blades in formation. Ambrose and the marshal did much better. Pox decided they must have been practicing in private. As he was dismissing them from drill, the marshal asked Pox
to carry a message to Sir Phellis.
"Cal or Dorian could take it," he said, as some of the men turned to listen. "But even though they live on that side of town, it's an extra couple of miles for either of them, and they start work early in the morning. It wouldn't take you long to ride out there."
"I'll be glad to," said Pox, honestly. She had been looking for a good reason to talk to Sir Phellis in privacy.
"And I can't work with you for a couple of days," the marshal went on. "That's why the message must go tonight. I'm leaving for Barton Court rounds immediately. Ambrose here will handle matters at the Grange, drill as usual," he said to the others. "I expect I'll be back in a few days, but Ambrose will take drill if I'm not. Poxenarian, I suggest that you and Ambrose ride together an hour or more a day, but don't try mounted drill until I return. And if you can give him a couple of hours of swordplay, it'll be good for both of you."
The other men left at last, and the marshal ushered Pox back to his study. On his desk was a leather tube. Pox could see the paper rolled inside. He nodded at it.
"That's for Sir Phellis. It explains what I'm doing. Now, you seemed uneasy tonight. What have you found?"
Pox told him about the blazed tree and the game trail that ended a few yards from it and the road. The marshal nodded.
"I think you've found something important. If you'll take my advice, don't ride that way tomorrow. If you were seen pausing there, well, it could be very dangerous. Right now a single arrow could end your campaign. Anything else?"
Pox hesitated. She glanced at Ambrose, leaning against the door. He shrugged and moved back into the passage. I'm not sure. One of the yeomen said something.
"Asked or said?"
"Asked, at first, about my business with the council. He asked if I'd been hired or if I'd bribed them."
The marshal's face stiffened. "Who?"
"Sir, I don't think he meant insult."
"I didn't ask that. I asked who it was."
"I think his name is Dorian."
The marshal nodded. "That doesn't surprise me. Dorian is difficult sometimes. He became a guardsman after he moved here. Anything more?"
Pox thought of Dorian's words and decided none of them were important. "Not really, no."
He looked thoughtfully at her before going on. "Poxenarian, it's my business to defend my yeomen if they need it. Don't be afraid to tell me what they say."
"But I don't want to be—" She couldn't think how to say what she meant, that no soldier held another to close account for every word, or told even a sergeant what a friend had said.
"You are not of our fellowship yet," said the marshal with a smile. "Now, I meant what I said about you and Ambrose riding out together. Race the horses, if you will. Anyone will understand that. Ride north and east for a day or so. Wear your mail and keep alert. If you find where the brigands are hiding out, talk to Sir Phellis before you do anything. Don't wait for my return, if you need to take action, but don't rush things either. Ambrose will not be able to go with you on an attack. Until I return, his primary responsibility must be the Grange."
A little later, Pox rode north out of town toward the keep. Most of the houses were dark. The black horse's hoofbeats echoed in the quiet streets. She had put on her mail shirt and kept one hand close to her dagger. At the keep, torches burned at the perimeter fence and on the building itself. An alert sentry challenged her. She waited while he took her name in and returned to escort her to the entrance. There, another soldier led her upstairs to Sir Phellis's workroom, a long room with two tables, littered with papers and maps. Sir Phellis and Master Zinthis, standing together near one table, looked up as she entered.
"You have an urgent message from the marshal?"
"Yes, sir." Pox pulled the leather tube from her tunic and passed it over. Zinthis smiled at her. As Sir Phellis, frowning, worked the paper out of the tube and unrolled it, Zinthis wore a different but equally rich-looking velvet robe, trimmed in white fur around the shoulders. Pox noticed, once again, the graceful movements of his hands.
"Why don't you sit down, Poxenarian? We have spiced wine ready on the fire. Would you care for some?"
Pox shook her head, not certain what courtesy demanded, but sat in the chair Zinthis pointed out. He moved to the one next to her and sat down with a sigh, stretching his legs.
"I'll have some, then, if you permit."
He hooked a pot lift in the handle of a can on the hearth and poured the wine into his mug.
"Ah, these chill autumn nights make the best of wine. You should try it."
He slid his eyes sideways at her.
"Or perhaps you drink only ale?"
I...
Most soldiers drink ale, said Pox. Wine, we had that with an herb in it, if we were wounded.
Numb wine, yes. Not as good as a potion, but good enough. But you're hardly a common soldier now, lady, and you might find you like spiced wine.
Xynthis poured another mugful and passed it to her. Pox took it and sipped. Xynthis watched her, his eyebrows raised.
Well?
It's very good. She looked down and sipped again. It was good, a red wine flavored with her favorite spices.
Have you found any trace of our brigands? Asked Xynthis.
No, sir, unless something I saw today. She told him about the blazed tree, and answered its questions. She started to add what the marshal had explained about the possible uses of such a blaze in setting an ambush, but remembered in time that Sir Felis probably already knew that. He nodded.
Fresh blazes. There's that merchant from Chea in town now. Wasn't he planning to leave tomorrow, Xynthis?
That's right. Master, merchant, Kobai Trav something, and his gnome partners.
Gnomes? Asked Pox, sitting up.
Yes, what is it? Haven't you seen gnomes before?
No, I've heard of them. She remembered Bosk talking about gnomes, elves, and dwarves on her first trip south.
Well, around here you'll see gnomes fairly often. I'm surprised you didn't see these at the inn today. Two of the gnome kingdoms are less than a 3 days' ride from here. If you meet them, remember that they're very strict.
Strict?
Xynthis laughed. They make a court judge look like a juggler, Poxenarian. They're full of dignity and pride, and the right way to do everything. Ashto, help you if you laugh at a gnome or fail to complete a contract.
They don't like wizards, said Sir Felis dryly.
Pox glanced at him, and he grinned slightly, cocking his head at Xynthis. Xynthis flushed. It's not that, Sir Felis. It's that they're so...
He waved his hands in the air.
Sober, he finished. Dead serious all the time. That's gnomes.
Anyway, Sir Felis went on, there's a westbound caravan in town now, headed for the gnome kingdoms next, and then Varela. And if that blaze is fresh, it could mean that the brigands are planning to attack.
It won't do any good to tell gnomes, said Xynthis.
No, perhaps not. But I will send word to the caravan master.
Not you, Pox, he said as she opened her mouth. I don't want you to ride with this caravan. You weren't hired as a guard. If the brigands do strike, they should leave some trace you can follow to find their lair.
Sir Felis agreed with the marshal's advice to ride out in other directions for the next day or so. Pox took this chance to look at his maps one more time and fix in her mind the location of the ruined buildings he thought might harbor brigands. The next morning, when Pox went out to care for the black horse, she found the inn yard noisy and crowded. The day before she had been so excited about the blaze that she hardly noticed the new arrivals. Now teamsters were hitching teams of heavy mules to wagons. Pox realized that the short fellows she dismissed as someone's boys were actually not human. Gnomes, she assumed. They were not so stout as the dwarves she'd seen. They wore plain clothes of gray and brown. Sevri merely nodded at her, darting quickly from one stall to another as she finished her morning's work. Pox decided to eat breakfast at the inn, after feeding the horses, so that she could watch the caravan leave. It was not nearly so large as the one she had been with in Arrhenius. 7 wagons loaded with barrels and bales, with 2 guards, besides the driver on each. The merchants, a blonde human and 2 gnomes in sober colors but richer cloth than the gnome teamsters, rode saddle mules. Pox noticed that none of the gnomes smiled, though the human merchant grinned a farewell to Hebbenford and promised to bring a barrel of Marakai Red on the way back. She went on with her breakfast, and was just washing down the last crumbs of it when Ambrose appeared outside. She leaned out the window and called to him.
I thought I'd come here, he said, dismounting, if we're riding east today.
Just a moment. Pox gestured to Hebbenford, who came to take her coins. I know I'm late, but I thought I'd have time to breakfast before work today.
Don't rush.
Ambrose did not seem in any hurry.
Shall I saddle your horse for you?
No, I don't know how he'd behave. Pox hurried up to her room, remembering the marshal's injunction to wear mail every day. She was startled to see the black-clad man lounging in the upper passage.
Had he been trying her door? But he smiled and nodded, as if glad to see her. Pox unlocked her door thoughtfully and latched it behind her. Everything seemed to be in place. She donned the lightweight mail the Elfane Tag had given her, pulled her shirt back over it, and caught up her old cloak. With that rolled into a bundle under her arm, she came back into the passage and found it empty. She had heard no footsteps passing. By the time she was back downstairs, Ambrose had led his horse into the inn yard. He was munching a hot pastry and grinned at her as she went into the stable. Sevri was busily cleaning out stalls. Pox thought of telling her about the black-clad man, but decided against it. She saddled the black horse without trouble, led it into the yard and mounted. Ambrose swung into his own saddle and they rode out, turning right onto the east road.
"How far out this way have you ridden?" he asked.
"Not very. I came in this way, on a trail that joins the road from the south."
"I know the one.
I've ridden that far, no more."
"Let's go to the border, then," said Ambrose.
Pox looked at him. He seemed happy and younger, like a child at a fair. She wondered what the life of a yeoman marshal was like.
"How far is that?"
"Oh, if we keep moving, we can be there and back by tonight, late tonight."
"Should we?"
Ambrose grinned at her.
"Probably not, but it would be fun. I grew up near the border. I know the country. We won't get lost, and I don't think anything this way will bother us."
"Well, the marshal said..."
"The marshal said ride other ways than west. This is other. By Gerd, Pox, I haven't had a day to myself since..."
He stopped suddenly and ran his hand through his hair. Pox remembered suddenly that she had not brought her helmet and felt stupid. What good was mail when a head blow could kill so easily?
"Anyway," he went on more calmly, "I don't see that it will hurt to ride all day. If we don't make it that far by noon, then we'll turn back. Why not?"
Pox wondered if he really wanted to visit his home. She did not want to ask. She wondered what Ambrose would say if she turned back for her helmet. Would he think she was a coward? Was he even wearing mail himself? She tried to see, and could not tell. The mail from the Elfane Tag, she had found, did not jingle as her other mail shirt had. She thought perhaps good mail did not. In the end, she said nothing, and they jogged on together into the morning sun.